Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to the 10th episode of the Calcioland Podcast. So I want to begin by thanking you. I know we do this all the time. But the other day, I was telling Alex, my producer, who's here with me, we're finally back in studio together, that, you know, this week we were going to do 3 episodes. I told him, watch, by Saturday, after our 3rd episode is posted, we're going to be in the top 100 for sports podcast on iTunes. And we were shocked in a good way yesterday to be in the top 71 in the rankings. And that's only thanks to you guys that are sharing, retweeting. The praise we get from all of you really humbles us. So I really want to thank you guys. I can't begin to tell you what a nice surprise that was. So again, please keep doing what you're doing. It's really paying off. So this week, what excited me is to see that Di Marzio has been tweeting about Mario Balotelli's future. And I've hinted at this in the past. One of the reasons that I have a strong affection for Mario Balotelli is, just like me, he grew up in Italy as a foreigner. I have a lot of love for him in that sense, because sometimes it wasn't exactly easy. And I can imagine for him, as an African-American, as we say here in the U.S., black in Italy, how difficult that was. So I've always respected him for that. So, you know, obviously Balotelli is a very colorful character. So, Alex, tell me, out of all the Balotelli stories, which is your favorite one?
Well, it's funny because, you know, for anybody who listened to way back when, the preview episode, they know that I'm new to football, relatively, especially compared to you. But Balotelli was one of the first players that I had heard of before I was into the sport. Anybody who's followed Balotelli can remember when he did that audacious and really inappropriate move against the Galaxy way back when. But that's when I started to, you know, gain attention to him. And there's so many. I knew you were going to kind of ask me this, so I had to debate between, you know, he threw darts at a youth team player. You know, one of his best friends at nightclubs would go up to women and say, "Mr. Balotelli is ready to see you now." So a lot of good stuff. I don't necessarily condone all of it. But my favorite, David, was his mom sent him out to the store pretty much just to grab some essentials, some everyday things. I don't remember the exact items, but, you know, just you're doing a nice little solid for your mother. And he comes back after 5 hours with none of those things. But behind him is a transportation truck, you know, a delivery truck. And he has a big trampoline, 2 Vespa scooters, and a ping pong table. And, you know, which I just think is ridiculous, because all he needed to do for his mother was just get a few simple items. And he came back with not only random items, but huge items. So you could pick something where he disrespected somebody, but I just think he's a funny individual. I don't think he's really that malicious. There's stories of him, you know, randomly handing out thousands of euros to strangers. But I just thought that was a great one, because I would have loved to see the reaction of his mother at the time. But, you know, coming back to more now in the current, you mentioned the rumors. Do you think he should stay at Nice, because he had a nice season, especially in the beginning, or should he go to Borussia Dortmund?
Very interesting question. So Balotelli has struggled to fit in at a lot of teams. So part of me thinks that since it's worked out at Nice, it makes a lot of sense for him to stay there. Also, if you think about it, he's kind of the signature player in the French league. He's probably, with Verratti, Di Maria, if he stays at PSG, probably the biggest star. I would say definitely on social media, the most famous player. And that's something that his agent, Raiola, said too. And I have a feeling he did it on purpose to bring him at Nice for that reason. So Nice wants to keep him. I definitely, you know, I'm a big fan of the theory, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So that would be intriguing. At the same time, Dortmund could be a great place for him as well. Interestingly, you know, I have a good friend of mine who works at the Bayern USA Twitter account, and we're going to have him on soon. Like, the minute the rumors broke, like, he texted me right away, and he goes, "Please, David, tell me that Balotelli is going to Borussia Dortmund." And I told him, I was like, "I know why." I was like, "You're going to have material forever if he goes there." So I can see that as well. I'm only concerned that Balotelli in Germany, I don't know. So I can argue both cases. I just hope things work out for him, whatever he decides to do. He's also been linked to Sassuolo. Could see him maybe at Sampdoria. But to answer your question, you put a gun to my head. I'm going to say stay at Nice, continue to do well, be the biggest star in Liga.
All right, fair enough. Gun to your head this time. Do you think Balotelli will return to the Italian national team?
So I was asked the same question not that long ago by Eric Winaldo on his show on Sirius. And, you know, I told him I'm really not sure. And I say this for a couple of reasons. For one, you look in recent years, we've had a resurgence of great Italian strikers. We've had Gabbiadini in the Premier League. We've had Ciro Immobile have an amazing comeback season at Lazio. We've, of course, had Belotti exploding on the scene. We also have Petagna, who doesn't score that many goals, but is a good central first striker. So already for Balotelli, I don't see, you know, a great fit. You know, talent-wise, he's probably better than all those players. But, you know, I just don't know if he'll be able to get back. And the other reason is, you know, he's burned a lot of bridges with the Italian national team. That World Cup in Brazil was a disaster. I think, you know, in a lot of ways, he was probably made the scapegoat there. But I feel that, you know, as long as Buffon and De Rossi are on the Italian national team, the Senators, really the guys in charge, I don't know if that's going to happen. And also Italy's coach, Giampiero Ventura, you know, every time he's asked about Balotelli, he always says, look, you know, this isn't about ability. He clearly has it. But he goes, I'm not going to have a player that goes out clubbing till 4 a.m. on the team. So unfortunately, I have my doubts, at least in the short term. We'd have to see Ventura, Buffon, De Rossi eventually leave. And look, Super Mario's young enough that that could happen someday, but I don't see it in the short term. So as usual, we got some great questions from you guys on Twitter. Again, I can't begin to tell you how grateful I am for all your support for that. You know, not only with pushing the podcast, subscribing, telling your friends, but also sending in your questions, which, you know, really make the most interesting part of the podcast when we get into transfers. So if you want to send in a question, please use the CalcioLand hashtag. And Alex, which ones did you pick for tonight?
All right. Well, this first one really caters to my heart, as I feel like the first ones always do. It's my favorite player in Serie A, my favorite team. David, what are the odds Alexandro joins Chelsea?
So yesterday we talked about Bonucci as well. And for me, it's very simple. Juve is a club that believes if a player wants to leave, don't get in the way. They're confident in their directors, Marotta and Paratici, to find the right replacement. So short of Bonucci or Alexandro pushing to leave, they'll gladly keep him. You know, I always look at a scarcity at a position. It's going to be pretty much impossible for Juve to get a left back of Alexandro's caliber. So short of him pushing to leave, and at this time, you know, it's a long summer, but right now there's no indication that that's the case. I don't see it. You know, too, some people point to the fact that Juve has an excellent backup in Asamoah, who's reinvented himself as a left back. They also have a very promising left back in Spinazzola at Atalanta, but those would either of those guys or having both of them on the team wouldn't be as good as having Alexandro. So unless he pushes to move, I think Chelsea fans are going to have to settle for Marcos Alonso, which quite frankly is nowhere near as bad as Twitter makes it out to be.
No, that's fair. He had a great season, whether people want to admit it. All right, the next one. It's a little long in the tooth, but it all, you know, connects. What changed in Milan's pursuit of Alvaro Morata? And what are the odds they get a deal done with Torino for Andrea Belotti? And there's a lot of confusion. Can you please explain Belotti's exit clause?
So let's start with that piece. And the reason I put all these questions together is because they're really ultimately all connected. So let's start with Belotti, because I get a lot of questions like, what is this exit clause? Why are they asking for more money from abroad compared to Italy? So I always like to give you the context of the situation so you better understand it. So last summer, we saw Juve sign Higuain and Pjanic from rival clubs. They came to Juve. That was really a groundbreaking moment in Italian football. That started the trend where a lot of clubs started signing players to extensions with huge exit clauses that were only valid abroad. In a lot of ways, those clauses are really just anti-Juve. They don't want their players to end up like Higuain and Pjanic at Juve, especially Belotti. So let's break it down this way. Torino is in the same city as Juve. Torino's a mid-table club. They don't, you know, say Belotti goes to Milan, it's not a big deal. What they need to avoid is him going to Juve. So they designed this clause as this is only valid abroad, just to ensure he doesn't go to Juve. So long and short of it, Torino would take 100 million euro, which is Belotti's exit clause, which really sounds massive, from any club in Italy. So Milan's been sniffing around. They made an offer. Torino would accept some players in the deal if the total value is 100 million, but they want a lot of cash. They got, before the transfer ban, Atletico Madrid offered like over 50 million and two promising young players. So if you think that exit clause is absurd, just realize that maybe it's not as crazy as you think. So long and short of it, Torino would take that money from Milan. They'd take it from another club in Italy, although aside from Milan, I guess Inter, if they sold Icardi, that would be it. So just look at that clause as anti-Juve and that they would take 100 million from pretty much anyone. So we mentioned that Milan has been sniffing around. Their top choice was Morata for good reason. There were some reports that, you know, Morata had pretty much left the door open to joining Milan. It certainly didn't hurt that Milan offered him a contract to make him the highest paid player in Serie A. And my colleague in Italy, Fabrizio Romano, who is, I think, in the long run is going to be the new Di Marzio once Gianluca, you know, he'll be with us for a very long time. But I think that's who's going to, you know, start filling the void once Gianluca gets tired of answering transfer questions. So Fabrizio wrote that, you know, in Cardiff, where Juve and Real Madrid played, you know, Morata's close to a lot of Juve players, especially Buffon. And, you know, seeing the Juve players there, it also kind of contributed to him thinking, you know what, if I go back to Italy, I'm not going to a club other than Juve. Interestingly, last summer, Napoli tried signing him to replace Higuain, who was heading to Juve, and he said, you know what, I'm just not interested. It's Juve or nothing in Italy. So I think the final in Cardiff, you know, definitely very disappointing for Juve, but maybe the proximity of all the Juve players with Morata avoided him going to Milan. Of course, too, the huge price tag that Real Madrid is asking for him contributes to that. You know, I've answered a ton of questions from Manchester United fans. In our last podcast, we took a deep dive in Morata. Suffice to say that I'm very confident if Manchester United closes the deal for Morata, which I think there's a decent chance that that happens, Manchester United fans are going to be very happy. If that doesn't go through, Manchester United, good chance are going to go for Belotti, and they're going to have to pay that, likely that exit clause if they include players, great. Keep in mind, Manchester United closed the deal with Torino for Darmian not that long ago, so they know the club. So that's the reason why I put all these questions together, because in a lot of ways, they're connected.
Okay. Well, staying on Milan, say they sign Andrea Belotti and Atalanta player Andrea Conti. Can they qualify for the Champions League next season?
Great question. So actually today, the day that we're recording this, Di Marzio reported that Milan has an agreement with Conti, the player, and now need to negotiate with Atalanta. Conti, to me, is the best young right back in Serie A. Would be a great signing for Milan. You know, on the way to the podcast, too, I was thinking to myself, say Milan signs a Conti and, you know, Biglia's on his way, so both Montolivo and Abate wouldn't be starters. It'd be very interesting to see who would be the Milan captain, as an aside. So I think, you know, if they sign Conti and Belotti, Champions League looks very realistic to me. Keep in mind, in Italy, you need to be in the top four starting next season. I think there's a good chance. And, you know, what I ask myself when I look at teams like Milan and Inter when they make moves, there are some teams that they need to get above in the standings. They were behind quite a few teams. So I ask myself, are the players that they're buying, would they be starters on the teams that finished ahead of them? And I clearly think that both Conti and Belotti would be on quite a few of these teams. So I think those would be great moves. The other way that Milan can get back to the Champions League is in the Europa League. If they win it, you know, granted, it's a long competition, but you look at Milan's European DNA, that's another avenue that they have. So I think they have a good chance of getting there. I see a lot of similarities in Milan's move so far this summer to the first year that Conte was at Juve. They made a lot of similar moves, very solid players to fill positions of need. So Milan fans should be very optimistic, that's for sure.
All right. Would you say Milan jumped ahead of Juve in the race for exciting winger Kita Balde?
So I love Kita Balde on our podcast the other day. I said that to me, he has Dybala-level potential, really tremendous players. So this is a very interesting situation. So all the reports are pretty much confirmed, even by Kita Balde's agent, that Milan has an agreement with Lazio to sign both Kita and Biglia. Juve, on the other hand, is the destination that Kita Balde wants to go to. Last Friday, Di Marzio tweeted that Kita's dead set on joining Juve. And what makes the situation really interesting is that his contract expires in 2018. If you read to a lot of the quotes, there's now a battle between Kita's camp and Lazio. Lazio keeps saying, yeah, we made him a great offer to extend his contract. Kita's camp says, no, you never made us an offer. So because his contract expires next year, he has a lot of leverage. He could tell Milan, you know what, I'm not signing a contract with you. I'm just going to wait till January of next year and I'll sign with Juve on a free transfer, which leaves Lazio with receiving no return. So Milan has the agreement with Lazio. Juve has the agreement with the player. It's very hard to say who has the lead position on this. I think Milan really needs to sell to Kita the idea that if he comes to them, he's going to be maybe the best player on the team or close to it. So, you know, he could be the star there. At Juve, he'd have to battle with Cuadrado and Mandzukic for a starting job. He probably feels good enough about his talent that he probably could. And then there's the other wrinkle that Juve has to negotiate with Lazio, with whom they really don't have a good relationship. Lazio's president, Lotito, has openly mocked Juve director Marotta. Juve has used literally videos of Lotito mocking Marotta to motivate the players. So it's a fascinating situation. This is really a negotiation to watch. I'm going to write about it for Calciomercato on Tuesday because I think there's a lot of wrinkles to this one.
All right, staying somewhat on Lazio, how would Lazio center back De Vrij fit into the Premier League?
I think De Vrij is one of the best center backs in Italy, has been for some time. The only issue with him is that he's fairly fragile. He's had a good amount of injuries in recent years. And, you know, in the Champions League, that could hurt him a little bit. He's been linked heavily to Liverpool after the Van Dijk. Is that how you say his name? Yeah, so that debacle is another thing this week. I mean, I'm so surprised by so many things that happened this week between Diego Costa and that one. So I think Liverpool, if they sign him and if he can stay healthy, he'd be a tremendous player. So I'm a big fan of his. The only concern I have is with his ability to stay healthy.
Okay, who are some realistic center back targets for Inter Milan?
So definitely this is a big position of need at Inter. And it's interesting because not that long ago, you wouldn't have said that because Miranda, who came from Atletico Madrid, was one of the best center backs in Serie A. He really struggled in the second half of the season like most players at Inter. Murillo in his first half season in Serie A was so good that he was already being linked to Real Madrid and Barcelona. And after that, absolutely collapsed. Then once Inter signed Gagliardini, they moved Medel to center back, and that seemed to work really well. But now we're back at square one. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens now that Spalletti is the coach there at Roma. You know, he's very versatile tactically, but he's used the three center back defense, and he really needs to improve in that department. So other than Liverpool, I think De Vrij is a player that Inter's been looking at for some time. I'm interested to see if they go back to him. And the other player, and it would be my guess, is the one who is going to be on Inter, is Rudiger, who was with Spalletti at Roma. It's going to be a huge transfer fee, but I think Inter, with their deep pockets, after they get rid of their financial fair play issues, are going to be able to meet that price. So I could see Rudiger. I'm interested to see if he'll be the only one, though. Okay, so I am very excited for the interview part of the podcast. A few days ago, we got into a little bit the aftermath of Juve's loss in Cardiff against Real Madrid. We're going to go a lot deeper into it now. I am joined by my good friend. We've had a lot of great guests. This is someone that I've actually met in person, too, which is pretty cool. So Adam Digby is, in my opinion, the best Juve, one of the best cultural writers in general in English. So I'm thrilled to have him. You can read Adam's work on BN Sport, 442, Bleacher Report, Sport 360. We're going to discuss his book in a little bit. So I am thrilled to have you, Adam. Thank you so much for being on Calcio Land with us tonight.
Oh, no problem. Thank you. And thanks for those kind words, David.
Awesome. So, Adam, let me take you back to Saturday. Like I said on the podcast yesterday, I thought Real Madrid was going to win. It wasn't just to try to jinx a win for Juve. I kind of had a bad feeling. I certainly didn't expect a Juve to lose in this fashion. To me, it's incredible that they came much closer to winning the game against Barcelona 2 years ago compared to Saturday. So tell me, in your opinion, what do you think went wrong and what surprised you the most out of that match?
I think I have to agree with that. It's very odd now, looking back on the two games that build up to that Barcelona game 2 years ago. We never expected Juventus to have a chance. It was, that team was too good and too strong, and Juve were very inexperienced, especially at that level. And that's the way that game played out over the first half. And then Morata scored, and you had that 5 or 10 minutes where Juve stood toe-to-toe with Barcelona, and you thought it would be okay. And it was kind of in reverse on Saturday. For the first half, it was like 1-1 at half-time. You thought, okay. If they keep playing the way that they're playing, it could be all right. And they never turned up for the second half. It was just completely flat. And it's really disappointing, because you think they had a much better chance to win this time. They had a much better team this time. And I think, as a fan, I think that's ultimately my response, is it was really disappointing to see them coming out so flat in the second half. I think as somebody who's job it is to kind of look a little bit deeper than that, and not to just go, well, of course they didn't win, they've got Higuain and he never scores in finals, what do you expect? To me it's the midfield. It's Allegri very smartly and very astutely went to a 4-2-3-1 midway through this season to mask the fact that he only had two serviceable midfielders in Pjanic and Khedira, because Marchisio was struggling with injury and he's still not 100% at all and anywhere near. So he went to two of those instead of three, and that allowed him to get better players on the field. And I think against Real Madrid that just backfired, because they flooded the central area, they had all the time in the world on the ball, and then they were able to pick out the people who make a difference, like Marcelo and Ronaldo. And then on top of that, you had Chiellini decided to leave Cristiano Ronaldo unmarked on two of the goals, which is never a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you've hinted at this in your answer, and I know you hate talking about transfers just as much as I hate talking about stats, which, you know, especially with the Morata thing, which I'm going to ask you later, is really getting at me. So, you know, without getting into names and all, I have a feeling you go into the midfield, but where do you think Juve needs to improve to take the next step?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think in midfield, and I think maybe at right back as well. I think if you have a better option at right back than Batshuayi. No criticism of him, but he's not a right back. If you have an actual out and out right back there, somebody a little bit more defensive minded than Dani Alves, that gives you Dani Alves to use as a winger. If you can have a third midfielder, obviously that allows more tactical flexibility. I think the biggest thing for me this summer, and I'm writing about it at the moment, is Juventus can no longer kind of make do. They've got a very good squad. They've got a very strong squad. They've got a lot of young players like Caldara and Spinazzola who we can bring back over the next few years. They need players who are good enough to start for Juventus in the Champions League latter stages now. And if that means they only sign two players and spend big money on those two players, like they did with Higuain and Pjanic, then really that's all this squad needs. And for me, it's more about that than which players it is. I think if they bring in a player who can make a difference to the starting 11, that will in turn determine the formation. And I think that's the way they've got to go. It's got to be a summary of improving. And I think the Champions League final, so the gulf between Juventus and the elite. So I think it's no surprise you look over the past 3 years, everyone's focusing on the two finals, but if you look back over the past three seasons, you've been eliminated from the Champions League by Barcelona, Bayern Munich and Real Madrid. And the difference between those three and Juve is every year they go out and sign the very best players who are available on the market. And that's what Juve have got to do this summer. They've got to sign the best players available, whatever position that is for, and then figure out how to use them accordingly. And with Allegri signing a new contract, that gives them all the tools to be able to do that, I think.
Absolutely. So speaking of Allegri, I really enjoyed, I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, was it 6 months ago, maybe already a year ago, that you interviewed him? And, you know, Allegri, as you mentioned, just signed this extension. To me, totally deserved. I know people like to overreact to one game on Saturday, but they lost to the team that won 3 out of the last 4 Champions League. And, you know, Allegri didn't become a donkey just because in the second half, Juve didn't show up. So since you got to interview him and you have a firsthand experience with him, tell me a little bit what surprised you the most about him, you know, as a person or even just as a manager at Juventus.
It was November 2015 when I interviewed Allegri. In the middle of that dreadful start that Juve made to the season before last now. And the thing that surprised me most, to be honest, is how calm he was. It was directly after 0-0 draws with Inter and Mönchengladbach. His job was being called into question at that time. Just 3 months on from being in the Champions League final before that. But he was seriously under pressure at that time. And the biggest takeaway from when I spoke to him was that there was nothing to worry about. He wasn't worried in any way. And it never felt like that was just a front that he put on for the media. I think we've seen in interviews past with Allegri, and when we see him on television, he very much wears his hat on his sleeve. You very much know where you stand with him. And he was so calm about the whole situation. And he was just, it will be fine. Everything will click into place. And when it does, we'll be absolutely fine. And not long after that, he was proven correct. And Juve obviously went on that massive unbeaten run and then carried that over into this season. So, yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is that he's not some company yes man. He's not just a placeholder like it seemed like he was at Milan and maybe when he first came to Juve as well. He's a great coach in his own right. He has some fantastic ideas tactically. He's really engaging to speak with. And he's just a great guy. There's no other way to put it, really. He's a great guy who's very, very good at his job.
So tell me a little bit, speaking of Allegri, and, you know, every time, you know, so many Juve players that other fans of other clubs crave, and they always hang on to this fact of some of the issues he's had with some certain players, especially Bonucci. How much credence do you put into him having some bad blood with some key players at Juve? Because to me, that's incredibly overblown. I know the media loves to, you know, add to that to kind of create some transfer speculation, but do you buy into that at all, that there's some bad blood between Allegri and some key players at Juve?
No, I think the times that occurred, it came after some bad results during the season. It came when certain players weren't playing very well. Bonucci's in particular came when the team was flat, and I think the reaction to that from Bonucci, from Allegri and from the team proved that was absolutely the right thing to do. And I think it was very telling that at the end of the season, when the players got hold of Allegri and they were throwing him up in the air, Bonucci and Dybala were both involved in that, and they're two of the players he's supposedly fallen out with. So I think it's just it's much ado about nothing, isn't it? It's news because it's Juve. If a Sassuolo midfielder had a really bad game and started criticising Di Francesco, it would be, yeah, he should shut up and listen to the coach. What's he talking about? And it was very much the same at Juve. Bonucci was wrong to scream at Allegri the way that he did, and Allegri handled it well, and Juve didn't really miss Bonucci, and I think that kind of put him in his place, and it showed the rest of the team that nobody is better than the collective, and that the needs of the team have to come first.
Absolutely. So let's review a little bit this season. Of course, there's the disappointment of the final in Cardiff, but overall, it's been a very successful season. Tell me who are the three best players in your opinion this season at Juve?
It's tough that when you sent me the questions, I was trying to look and I couldn't get it to less than six, to be honest. I've got Bonucci, Dybala, Buffon, Higuain and Sandro. I think you've got to say that Pjanic played well after his move. And I think after the formation change, you've got to give a lot of credit to Mario Mandzukic for making that work. But I think the other five are kind of the big names who did really, really well this season.
And on the flip side, are there any players that disappointed you overall, despite the fact that Juve had a very good season as a team?
I think Sami Khedira was shown up in the past few weeks as being a player who's a little bit limited and who Juve need more from. I think if I'm looking for somebody I'm really disappointed with, I think the only real names that come to mind are probably Storaro and Lamina, who've really not developed in the way that you would have expected them to after their first seasons with the club. And largely their kind of failings led to the signing of Rincon and the change to 4-2-3-1 because they were never good enough to stand in for Marchisio and play in a midfield three, which is really disappointing because you've invested good money and a lot of time in those two players. And I think it wouldn't surprise me now if one or both of them move on this summer.
I think that's very likely. So now let's get into a little bit more of the history of the club. We're going to discuss your book, Juventus, A History in Black and White, in detail shortly. But with that kind of as the backdrop, Dybala is obviously very impressive. People overreacting to one bad game in Cardiff overall. I think he's been incredible. You know, a lot of fans were concerned with the big transfer fee after just one great season. And now the transfer fee looks like an absolute bargain. Do you expect Dybala to be able to reach the levels of Alex Del Piero in the next few years?
I think that's a tough ask, to be honest. I mean, I think you're probably talking about the greatest player you've ever had there. I think he can be a very, very good player. I think he can be a Ballon d'Or winner. I think he'd probably need to be able to win the Champions League in order to do that. But I certainly think he's got the ability. And I think everything we see from him, from his work ethic, the effort that he puts in, the way that he clearly cares about the team and the games and the results, he's got all the tools he needs to be a top-class player. I think comparing him to Del Piero, I think he's always going to be a bit of a stretch, but I think he's got it in him to be the best player at the club. And you look around, as we were saying before, about the players who played well this season, I think that in itself is a remarkable accomplishment for a player so young and so inexperienced, really, when you think this is only his second season and he's already reached the Champions League final.
Absolutely. So now let's talk a little bit about your book. You know, I grew up in Italy. I know you spent a lot of times in Turin as well, growing up. And, you know, I knew a lot about the history of Juve. And you wrote this amazing book in English, which I recommend everyone read, both Juve fans, Juve haters. You'll get a lot of great information there. So you had this excellent book, Juventus, A History in Black and White. So tell me a little bit how the idea for the book came along and what types of resources did you use to research, which is really a book that goes from the founding of Juventus all the way to the hiring of Allegri. So tell me what inspired you to do it, how it came about, and how you researched it.
I was already writing for quite a few places at the time, and I was actually asked to write it by a publisher who spotted a gap in the market for books about foreign-based clubs. And I think you're starting to see a few more of those come out now. Obviously, there's been Barcelona ones, Real Madrid ones before that, but I think there's a Borussia Dortmund book on the way, Bayern Munich books, and it's something that really there isn't anything comparable to in English, so. It made perfect sense for the way that I've written about the club from before and the way that I've been involved for so long now in doing it. That I suppose that someone asked me is a great honour and a privilege, and it was certainly felt that way to write it. Then I started doing the research for it, and it was very easy to find a lot of it I knew already, filling in the details for like the early years of the club at the very beginning was quite straightforward. But then you go from Juve being formed in 1897 and changing their kit colours 6 years later to black and white up until the Quinquennio d'Oro in the 1930s where they won five titles in a row. And it's very, very sketchy. It's very hard to find any solid information about that. I found a couple of good books in Italian, almanacs about Juventus and about Serie A in general. A lot of the newspaper archives were very good, and the club themselves were very good in coming forward with information that they had to help fill in some gaps, because, as I say, those years and the years after that up until The John Charles Omaha Savoy teams of the 1960s, the sort of the period over the Second World War. Again, that was very, very difficult. And a lot of the newspaper stuff focuses more on Torino and Inter over that time period. So, again, that was difficult. But apart from that, it was all fairly straightforward. I mean, obviously, you fast forward to the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and that's a lot of that information is online. Obviously, you need to check it in more than one place and double-check that everything is all in order. And I did find that there's quite a lot of contradictory reports, whether it's mistranslations or... And then going back to finding the original Italian, it made it quite interesting, and it was great to do. And then obviously getting to write a couple of chapters about what was actually unfolding before my eyes in the past couple of seasons where the book finishes in the summer of 2014 was great too, because that was kind of me putting my own stamp on a portion of history, and hopefully sometime in the not too distant future, I hope to be doing that again with the last couple of seasons in between.
Absolutely. So for the next question, you gave away one of the players. You mentioned Del Piero as potentially the best player in the club's history. If you had to name the other four best players at the club, you know, recently I saw you were on BBC Wales talking about John Charles. So, you know, Juve's had some amazing players dating back to well before we were born. So tell us, if you had to pick five players that are the most important or the best players in Juve's history, who would you pick?
I think, sadly, I would have to leave out my favourite player, which would be Beppe Forino, who was a captain in the early 80s when I was a youngster. And I know it's the same for you. You were around at the same time. So I think I'd have to actually leave him out. I think you've got to look at Del Piero, Gaetano Scirea. I think you've got to go back to Giampiero Combe, who was the captain of those teams in the 1930s. I think you have to have Gigi Buffon, to be perfectly honest, in the five best players, because obviously now he's won 10 Scudetti and he's played in three Champions League finals. I think that's no mean feat, and obviously the records that have been set this season in both the league and the Coppa Italia, I think he's got to be there. And I think that the last place then is very difficult. I think there's Omar Savory, obviously, who was the first player at the club to win the Ballon d'Or, John Charles, as you mentioned, Marino for a personal shout, and I think, to be fair, I think you could look at a couple of other players in the current team, a Marchisio or a Bonucci, and make a very good case for any one of those two. I think I'd go with John Charles, because he was voted the club's greatest ever foreign player in the late 90s. And then it's really difficult, because, to be honest, thinking now, I think you have to say Michel Platini. I think
Absolutely. Being
the leading scorer in Serie A and the Ballon d'Or winner 3 years in a row when you're playing midfield is frankly ridiculous.
Yeah, especially in that Serie A that Platini played in. That was a filthy Serie A. So I totally agree. I think that's a great shout.
Yeah, I think it's got to be him over Beppe Forino or John Charles. I think that's fair. So to answer your question in a more briefly, Del Piero, Scirea, Buffon, Combe, Platini, I think, will be the five.
Yeah, and I really like that you picked Forino, because to me, you know, he represents the grinta and, you know, the industrious nature of a lot of the great Juve teams, and quite frankly, what was lacking in the second half in Cardiff. So now, Adam, you know, a lot of the people that listen to the podcast, a lot of the people that follow me, you know, there's so many great young writers out there that are always looking for tips on how they can improve. So in this part of the interview, I want to ask you a little bit about this. So, you know, what really impressed me about you is like your ability to write for so many different sites. You know, I was so impressed that I asked you in private, you have an agent, like, how are you making this happen? And you told me, no, I'm a self-made man. I just get all these gigs. So tell me a little bit how you go about, you know, writing for so many impressive sites.
To be perfectly honest, it's hard work and building a reputation is the answer to that. I started out doing a blog just for myself, and from that I got a couple of offers to write for a few sites that was unpaid work. I took those gladly, because it was a chance to stretch myself and test myself. And then from then I started to get paid gigs, and it just kind of snowballed from there. You don't get anything that you don't ask for, so be a bit bold and pitch yourself to people, pitch a solid idea, and then deliver, to be perfectly honest. You have to deliver when you pitch to somebody big. You have to deliver the work that's worthy of being on that site, and you have to make it the very best that it can be, and make sure that it's up to the standard of the kind of the place that you're pitching for, if not better than that, to be perfectly honest. Because if you limit yourself to a certain level, then you're never going to aspire to be any better than that, and you're never going to take yourself any further. You've got to just be good at it, to be perfectly honest. To me, writing is not something that you can learn. It's not really in my nature, but if I'm allowed to get a little bit wistful and a little bit flowery, it's art. Writing is an art, and just because you have internet access and a keyboard, it doesn't mean that you're a writer. You have to be able to string a story together. You have to be able to collate the facts. You have to be able to tell the story in a way that people are interested in reading, and none of that comes easy. It is difficult. It is a skill, and to me, it's not one that you can kind of teach yourself or learn. You either can or you can't. Obviously, you can get better, and I'm always trying to get better. I'm always trying to improve, but I really do firmly believe that you either can write or you can't, and it's not something that you can just kind of pick up and do because you feel like it.
That's a great answer. And, you know, it takes me back when we interviewed Grant Wall, and he said, look, you know, whatever you do, it has to be quality. And because if not, you might not be asked to do it again. So I thought that was a great answer. So tell me a little bit, because I would imagine you also are a consumer of articles. Like, what things impress you when you read someone else's writing? What are the things that you look for in an article that you take the time to read?
The same thing, really. I think it gets harder when you're doing it for so long, but I think when I'm reading anything, whether it's a book, a match report, a story about a player, I want to learn something. And obviously, when you do this all day, every day, it's a little bit more difficult. But I still think that if you're just churning out a bland article that doesn't tell anybody anything that they didn't know already, then kind of what's the point? So first and foremost, I want to learn something when I read something. And the second, I want to enjoy it. It shouldn't be difficult to read. I shouldn't be thinking, that you've missed a word there, or you've spelled a mistake there, or I don't really think that fact that you've put in is correct. I want to enjoy it and to know that it's true. And to me, a big thing is if you were actually there. I think that's a really big deal for me a lot of the time when I'm, especially reading about sport. I think it's kind of difficult because so many people now consume football matches from watching them on television, and so many people write from that same angle. And I think you can always tell the difference. I think that there's a very big difference between reading somebody like Sid Lowe or a David Cartledge writing about Spanish football than somebody who's got a Sky Sports subscription sat in their living room or in their bedroom writing about it. I think there's such a huge difference from the way you can describe the atmosphere, from the closeness to what you're writing about, from the information that you get from the people you speak to every day. And from a personal point of view, it helps so much being at these games, whether it's a Juve game where I go out quite regularly, or I spent a lot of time earlier this season going to various grounds I've not been to before and to watch teams that I've not been to watch before. And I think you learn quite a lot. I have a very different opinion of Sassuolo now than I did have a year ago before I'd ever been to watch them. It opened my eyes to the struggles that they've got and the kind of plastic atmosphere that goes on at their stadium that kind of largely goes unreported. And I just think that's huge. And then the lastly, I think it's just being engaged. I think, I've spoken to you before about this, and I know we come at it from a very similar point of view, but guys like Bill Simmons and Zach Lowe, the way that they write about the subjects that they write about is just phenomenal. And I still think that I could never get anywhere near that level. And I love reading them. And Grant Wall is probably the same when I read about him. Like, I know he's been to Bayern Munich this year, and you read what he produces when he's been somewhere like that. And it's phenomenal to read somebody who puts so much care and attention into their work. And when you do it for a living yourself, you really learn to appreciate the effort and the research and the craftsmanship that goes into something like that. And I think it's testament to those guys that even somebody who writes all day every day and spends all day in front of a keyboard working, I still find time every day to read these guys, and there's not many of them, but the ones that I do, I truly appreciate the work that they're putting.
Great, Adam. I was really blown away. You really gave some incredible tips in that. And we're going to save, because you and I have been talking about this actually for more than a year, about having like a conversation on the Bill Simmons, Zach Lowe thing, because you and I really fit that mold. You know, we're obviously, I can speak for myself, not on that level, but as far as where they come from, that's going to be a great debate for another time. So I want to thank you so much for taking time to come on. I recommend everyone read Adam's book, Juventus, A History in Black and White. His articles are tremendous. Adam doesn't hide the fact that he's a Juve fan, but he's really a great writer for all of Serie A. So, Adam, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show with us today.
No problem, David. Cheers.